Everyone, I'd like to convene the May 30th, 2013 session of the House Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee. Good morning to everyone. Apologize for the delay. We were waiting for some of our committee members to arrive. I'm going to, first of all, open a work session on Senate Bill 357A. And Beth, if you could remind us what that bill is about.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 357A would direct the Board of Forestry to appoint an advisory committee to study and recommend financial support mechanisms to increase the pace and scale of federal forest management projects. The bill has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
All right. Very good. Committee members, do we have any discussion on this bill? Yes, Representative Krieger, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'm going to support the bill, but just like the committee we've got that's dealing with the timber-dependent counties and the bill as a result of Curry County, Josephine County not passing their levies and the fact that the forests aren't available for any type of management, really. That is the key issue. At some point, our federal legislators have to address, because there is, across the landscape, not all of it, it doesn't all lend itself to forest management. There's high-risk sites, water values, special sites that need to be protected. But to have the potential that we have in Oregon and not utilize it to a conservative degree, not optimizing it, is not acceptable. And the fact that the state's going to have to try to support a management scheme that isn't working, eventually we have to get to where we are managing it for both people and the environment. Right now we're not doing that.
Thank you very much. And short of comments that would be directed towards a motion on the bill, is there any other further discussion or questions before I do entertain a motion? I'm not seeing any. I'm going to recognize Vice Chair McEwen.
Chair Whitt, I move Senate Bill 357A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McEwen moves Senate Bill 357A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion on her motion? Is there any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, hearing none, I'll recognize once again Vice Chair McEwen. My mistake. I'm sorry. with that, are we ready for a vote?
What yes.
Okay. Maria, would you please call the roll?
Representative Krieger. Aye. Representative Reardon. Aye. Representative Thompson. Aye. Representative Munger. Aye. Representative Whitford. Aye.
Vice Chair McEwen.
Aye.
Chair Whitt.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes. And is there a volunteer to carry this bill? Seeing none. Vice Chair Esquivel has volunteered. Thank you very much. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 357A. Thank you very much, committee
members. Mr. Chair, it would be okay if we got a set of questions for everybody. You have to have them ahead of time or I deny.
Oh, my goodness.
I will deny answering the questions.
All right. Thank you very much. And with that, next on our agenda, I'm going to open an informational meeting on Oregon Food Bank's partnership with Oregon Agriculture. So with that, I'd like to call forward, please, Philip Kennedy Wong, and anyone else that would like to have accompany you. Good morning to each of you.
Good morning.
Welcome to our committee, and please decide among yourselves the order of your presentation. And I want to express our appreciation for you being here today. Thank you so much.
Chair Witt and members of the committee, for the record, Philip Kennedy Wong. I want to thank the committee for this opportunity for the Oregon Food Bank Network to share with you some important work that we are doing with Oregon agriculture. This is a great opportunity for us to share some of the successes and also some of the challenges that the network has in terms of feeding those who are hungry in our state during this difficult time. In this presentation, you'll be hearing from a couple sets of speakers that will give you hopefully a good understanding of some of the ongoing work that we do have with growers and the food processing industry. Also, the work that we've been doing around game donations and processing game donations, as well as a quick and short update on the fish bycatch legislation that was passed in February 2012. And then lastly, we want to share with you some work that we're doing where we're going out into all parts of the state of Oregon and working with folks involved in the food industry. Very, very exciting work. It's called Feast and Rare, and we want to share that with you. We have sort of built in an opportunity for you to ask questions for each of the panels that comes up, and we're hoping that we can get through it where you have the opportunity to hear from each of the panels and also get your questions answered. So each group will have roughly 10 minutes and hopefully about 5 minutes for questions. But we are certainly, you know, flexible to work with whatever questions that you might have as our presentation moves forward. So I just want to start with a quick overview of the Oregon Food Bank Network and hunger in the state of Oregon, just to provide you the context for the following subjects that you'll be hearing. I want to start first with describing to you Oregon's food insecurity rates. You look at this, if you can see on the chart, that chart breaks down in by county the what's called a food security rate. Food security is a USDA term that identifies and quantifies through the U.S. Census. They take a survey to determine how many people are missing a meal in a given week. And so food security is also measured by quality of food as well. So the higher percentages means that not only are they missing a meal in a week, but they may be eating food that are less nutritious than is necessary for a healthy diet. And then the map to the right is a map of the Oregon Food Bank Network, how we're structured. We are a network of 20 regional food banks, and as you'll see on that map, the locations of all of those 20 regional food banks, they act as sort of a warehouse distribution system for nonprofits across the state of Oregon. And if you look on the map, you'll see that we have approximately 945 partner agencies. That's the term that we use. These are your nonprofits in your communities. They're your churches, group homes, dining halls, meal programs. Chances are if they serve food as part of their service, they're getting it most likely from the Oregon Food Bank Network. And the next slide is to give you a sense of how much food is going through the system. And for the third consecutive, well, we are on the verge of the third consecutive year of distributing a record over 80 million pounds of food through the network. And if you look at the equation, you can see the sources of where we get our food. And the following presentations will be spending a lot more time on that 54% percentage of the food industry donations that we get. As you can tell, it's the largest share of food sources that we have and receive through the network. And if you combine that with all the food drives, if you combine it with all the food drives, it clearly gives you close to two-thirds of our food sources coming from private sectors. So all of that has led to essentially the distribution of a lot of food through the state of Oregon. I also tossed in a number on the bottom of this slide, which describes to you how many emergency food boxes that are distributed or have been distributed in the last fiscal year. And again, for the third consecutive year, not only 80 million pounds of food statewide, but also over a million emergency food boxes. These are the boxes that you would get from a food pantry, which supplies a household between 3 to 5 days worth of food. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to my colleagues to my left, and they will explain to you some of the partnerships that we have to make all of this possible, and what are some of the exciting things that we are doing. Thank you very much.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mike Moran. I'm the food resource manager at Oregon Food Bank. So I manage the food procurement strategies for the entire, for Oregon Food Bank, but also for the entire statewide network. Really, Oregon agriculture is the cornerstone of our food resourcing strategies. You know, as Philip mentioned, 54% last year of the food that we distributed came through the food industry. And using that term, it really for us is everybody from the grower down to the retailer and everybody in between in distribution, manufacturing, processing. All of those folks encompass the food industry. Just briefly, you know, food banks have been around since the 70s. Back in the early days of food banking, we were primarily a distribution system for USDA commodities that were allocated through Title III of the Farm Bill on the nutrition programs. And over 80% of the food that food banks distributed back then came to us from USDA, and primarily in the forms of boxes and cans. So over the years, we developed a very good system for receiving and distributing boxes and cans. As times have changed, the supply that we get from USDA has been a steady decline over the past 20 years. Now, less than 20% of the food that we distribute comes to us from USDA. With all of the conversations in DC, we expect that number to continue to decline. And so we've really relied on the food industry to pick up where USDA has left off. Early on, that was also boxes and cans. Most of what we got came to us from manufacturing, processing, and it's defects and defaults, things that were meant to be sold but couldn't be sold, and so we helped the industry move them to people that need them. As the industry has gotten more efficient, and I can tell you the 2007 economic crisis really forced a lot more efficiency in the system. All of that efficiency means less donations for us because it was their inefficiencies that were donations. So we're seeing less and less box and cans. And as we think about what we would like to do or how we're going to be able to make up that distance, we're really looking at Oregon Agriculture as our primary partner. Fortunately, Mother Nature makes it impossible to be as efficient in the field as you can in a manufacturing facility. And there are always places and opportunities where food is being grown but not able to be distributed. Working with Farmers Ending Hunger and with other members of Oregon Agriculture, with the Oregon Department of Agriculture, with Fish and Wildlife, other state agencies, we've really focused our time and attention on how do we be better partners for agriculture. And the challenge that presents for us is we're now dealing in perishable products rather than boxes and cans. And the logistics are much different than they were for us when it was something shelf-stable and dry. Mm-hmm. Coolers and refrigeration and freezers are more essential. Building more infrastructure throughout our network of agencies, providing them with that ability, but also moving things more quickly. We've really had to rethink our entire collection and distribution system. Fortunately, we've been pretty successful. In the past 6 years, we've gone to distributing a little over 2 million pounds of fresh produce and agricultural products per year. This year, we will distribute over close to 10 million pounds of fresh agricultural products. And we're looking at growing that number by about 39% going into next year. How we're doing that is, as I said, getting better at moving stuff fresh. But also, more importantly, as you saw on the previous slide, we have a lot of partners in the industry. NORPAC, National Frozen Foods, Stallbush, Continental Mills, other providers, other industry folks help us because we can work within their system on how they move food themselves. So helping us shelf-stabilize when possible, but also helping us with some of the transportation, harvesting, and other infrastructure we need to get that product out of the field and to families that need it. I'm going to highlight just quickly, how do you go forward? There we go. So just as a quick overview of what that looks like. Most of our food that comes from the field is stuff that either was harvested and couldn't be sold or was never harvested because of grading choices and decisions. You know, a couple years ago, actually, we had a partnership with Senator Thompson out in Hood River. He called us up because he had a neighbor who had hail damage to his pear orchard. They were not going to be able to harvest those pears, or were not planning to harvest those pears because there was no market value for them. With the Senator's help, we were able to identify picking crews in the area, work directly with the growers, and have those pears harvested and moved to us. So what would normally have just gone to waste translated into about 150,000 pounds of pears that we were able to distribute to families in need. Pears are great because we can distribute them. They come self-packaged. We don't have to do much with them. We can just distribute them as is, but not everything comes to us that way. Wheat growers are another great partner that we have, and we've got a lot of wheat growers in eastern Oregon. Wheat growers for many years now have been donating a portion of their crops, working with Farmers Ending Hunger. Most of them are making that decision pre-planting. They're saying, okay, these number of acres will be dedicated to food bank production. But unfortunately, wheat is not something that you can just kind of throw into an emergency food box and send to somebody. Most people wouldn't know what to do with it. But working with Pendleton Flour Mills, we've been able to work to mill that wheat into flour. Flour is great, but baking mix is even better. And so then working even further down the food chain, Continental Mills then was able to convert that into pancake mix for us. And then we used our volunteer labor to rebag and relabel that and then distribute it out. Last year, that was over 225,000 pounds of pancake mix. And we're looking at moving and continuing that cycle forward. That really is sort of a nutshell of how we've had to evolve in food banking. We're no longer just the passive recipient of boxes and cans and distribution to agencies, but we're actively orchestrating complex partnerships with multiple partners from the growers through the manufacturing and distribution chain to get food out to the people we need it. It comes at increased cost, but fortunately, our fund donation base has helped us support that. Other places that we look for that support are in places like Senate Bill 430 that we're looking to move forward, which is the crop donation tax subtraction that we've proposed, because it helps the grower offset those additional costs of harvesting and moving those crops out of the field. It's a fairly small monetary impact on the farm, but it really does represent about a little bit less, but about the cost that it would actually cost to pick and pack something out that they would not otherwise harvest. And so we're pretty excited. There's a federal deduction for food donations, but it doesn't apply to farmers because of their accounting standards and their general methods of incorporation. They're prohibited from accessing the federal benefit. So we're hoping that we can help them on a local level. And I just want to highlight one last, before I turn to John, from Farmers Ending Hunger, because it was so recent, it's a great story. And it really, for me, is emblematic of the way that we work with the food industry and particularly with growers. Several years ago, I met a gentleman named Mike Noonan, who's a potato grower down in the Klamath Basin area. Mike's a really nice guy. Met him actually through another food industry connection. And we talked about potatoes, because potatoes are a great crop for us to donate. They're a storage crop. Everybody knows how to cook with potatoes. They're nutritious. And we grow a lot of them here in Oregon, coincidentally. So a few years ago, he said, yeah, I'd love to help. And he donated a couple truckloads of potatoes. Last year, we asked him if he could do a little bit more, and he did. And last year, he donated about 125,000 pounds of potatoes. And then talking with him this year, he realized he probably could do even more. And so this year, our fiscal year ending in June, he'll hit probably about 500,000 pounds of potatoes this year that he's donating. A couple weeks ago, my colleague Dan Krunikin, who works on my team doing food resourcing, was down in Klamath Falls and was there because they wanted to do a story in the Herald News, about Mike Noonan's efforts. And during that interview and during the development of that story, he also revealed to us, which we did not know, that he is actually planting 25-plus acres on our behalf this year. And the entire 25 acres will be grown for the food bank and the food bank network, which translates into somewhere between 800,000 and a million pounds of potatoes that we'll get next year on a dedicated planned production basis. And what I was really struck by was that for Mike, it was a logical thing for him to do. He grows food, and we hear this consistently from growers, and John, I can tell you more about that. They grow food. They're in the business of feeding people, but they need a little extra help sometimes, and when it makes sense and how to make it make sense. We really are there to meet them halfway, find out how to make it easiest for them And he even said in the articles that what they've really become, what has made it easier for them is the efficiency that we help them gain by doing it. We pick up the potatoes at their farm. We're there every week. Whatever they have, we can load out based on, because we're delivering to the food bank in Cave Falls on a weekly basis. That's what we try to do, is make it easy for them. Make it as easy for them as possible and as cost-effective for them as possible. And they really are great partners. And really, one of the nice things, too, is Ron Bresser, who works at Mike Noonan's farm, what really sold it for him was that he really, they enjoy supporting their local community, but realizing that they're providing potatoes that are ending up on dinner tables in Pendleton and Astoria and throughout the state, that was a profound impact for them, that they were really able to help on such a statewide basis. And that really is our message to agriculture in general. How do we do more? I have to just tip my hat also to the Department of Agriculture. Everybody over there, from Katie all the way down, have been fantastic partners. They help us with outreach, they help us with messaging, and they've helped us navigate at times complex USDA structures and regulations to really learn how to do things not only effectively and efficiently, but also make sure we're in the highest level of compliance with food safety. With that, I'll turn it over to my colleague, John.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is John Burt from Dallas, Oregon, and I'm the Executive Director of Farmers Ending Hunger. Our story, I'll just take off from kind of from where Mike set the stage for, you can already see the attitude and the concept behind it, is to contact farmers and ranchers. Back in 2004, Oregon was, in that slide that Philip showed, was number one in food insecurity in the nation, made front page news. Our board chair today, his name's Fred Ziari, he went to a meeting at Oregon Food Bank back in 2004, and where this became known to him. And Fred's a really smart guy. He thought to himself, I'm a smart guy, and I didn't know this was going on. And furthermore, I'm really involved in agriculture. I had no idea that Oregon had this hunger issue. So he's driving back to Hermiston, where his irrigation consulting business is, and he's thinking to himself, and he's thinking, what can we do about this? And one of Fred's mantras is, do what's in front of you. And as he got a little further down the road, he thought, who better to feed hungry people than farmers? So Fred went out, started talking to the growers that he knows out in the Hermiston area, and got a pretty positive response there. What's taking you so long, Fred? So he talked to some others that he knew, and a small group of five formed Farmers Ending Hunger in that year, incorporated as a nonprofit, and started about their business. Finally, in 2006, the fall of 2006, they had decided they really needed to do something, so they pulled things together, and they delivered 173,000 pounds of frozen peas to Oregon Food Bank, all packaged, polybagged, in boxes. Looking back, it's the most expensive way to get frozen peas to the Oregon Food Bank, but that's what they did. It made an impact, and it made an impression on Oregon Food Bank. At that point, they got a grant from Oregon Food Bank, and I ran into one of their board members that year, later that November, and he said, John, you've got to do this. We can hire somebody. So I did. I started then. And so that next year, we started talking to growers, and the same story that Mike portrayed to you, one of our meetings, Tony Amstad of Amstad Produce, it's the simplicity of it that always astounds me. He came up to us and said, can you guys use potatoes? Well, yeah. Well, when I show you a slide later, you'll see the level of potatoes. Last year, it was over 500,000 pounds of potatoes in a year from Amstad Produce. And they've been doing 400,000 pounds consistently since that 2007 meeting. When the growers are made aware, farmers and ranchers are made aware of the need, and not all of them have that connection, but when they're made aware of the need and they're also made aware that there is something they can do about it, they step up. And Amstad Produce is one of those. Some of the processors, we've had that same kind of conversation. We met with Walt's Wholesale Meats, and we're getting cattle donated, and we needed somebody to process these cattle. There's no place in Oregon. Walt's Meats is in Woodland, Washington. That's a whole other issue that I'm sure you're well aware of. But in this conversation, and we were talking 25, 30, maybe 40 head a month, and we don't know where we're going to get this done, and Jay Hauser's sitting across in his office from us, and he says, yeah, we can do that. That was the end of the conversation. I had to ask him again. You know, you understand? Yeah, no, we can do that. And they have. They've been doing 20 head a month for 3 to 4 years now, no cost, period. Same thing at Pendleton Flour Mills. We were talking four or 500,000 pounds of potentially, and it was the same thing. No, we can do that. End of conversation. It's pretty amazing. And it's repeated all over the state. When we talk to growers, when they're made aware, it can be 1 acre of beans donated that's going to be processed through NORPAC Foods. It can be 1,000 bushels of wheat from a grower in Eastern Oregon that says, I'll commit this to you. This is what we're going to do. So if you would punch to the, it's already there. The idea is that these are deliberate donations. These are not left over. These are not after harvest. These are decisions that are made prior to harvest. They've got the acres available. Some have signed up and committed, like with NORPAC Foods. They've already signed a commitment form that says, well, I'm going to donate an acre of corn or an acre of beans. That's it. When it comes to harvest, it's the same quality and product that you find on the grocery shelf. And that way, we are trying to get high-quality, locally grown, Oregon-grown products into the food bank. And you can see from the slide that our tolls going from 2009 forward, we have grown from that 173,000 pounds to approaching almost 2 million pounds of donated product each year. And you can see from the list the breadth and the consistency of those donations. And it's a planned, deliberate donation that we and Oregon Food Bank can then depend on that it's going to be generated each year. And these are products that we've worked hand-in-hand with Oregon Food Bank to determine these are the kind of products we'd like to go after. Pancake mix being one of them, processed vegetables, fresh fruit and vegetables another. The livestock, the cattle is all processed into hamburger, and we continue to look for those kind of products. But these are the kind of products that we have here and the kind of quantities that are being donated each year. Thanks to my board, we've set a goal this year to double what we're doing in the next year or two. So we've got our task ahead. Certainly our work is cut out for us, but we feel that it's quite doable. And so we've started approaching additional growers that we know through personal relationships, that we board members know them. And we're looking at increasing that to 4 to 5 million pounds a year over the next couple of years, and we think we can get there. We're looking at additional potatoes. It's a great product. We're looking at increasing the amount that's coming through as wheat for pancake mix, and also looking at more onions from Eastern Oregon, and also fresh fruit and vegetables from up and down the valley, maybe getting additional processors involved. So we're all sort of pulling the same wagon forward. We've got our growers that donate through Farmers Ending Hunger. We have others like Noonan Farms that have contacted directly through Oregon Food Bank. They're all farmers and ranchers that you know and know throughout the state who step up and are quite generous in what they do. So it's an honor to be involved. I worked in agriculture all my life. I think this is what I was prepared to do. I point out, I handed out, there's a card that this is the one we use to give to growers, so it talks about the kind of products that they donate, but it does have all the contact information, our webpage. The last thing that, when we come to the legislature, we're always asking for something. Mike already mentioned Senate Bill 430, and we've been here to talk about that previously, and that is something that would make a difference for growers, I'm quite sure, so I would appreciate any support that's possible from this side. It moves forward. We certainly hope it does. The other thing is that, as the Ag Committee, I would just ask that you do everything you can to continue to keep a healthy and sustainable agriculture in Oregon. If Oregon farmers and ranchers can operate in an economically viable environment, then they can continue to do these kinds of things. They cannot do what they're doing to help us if they're not profitable as a business. So I'd make that plug for agriculture whenever I get the chance. Thank you very much.
Thank you all very, very much. What a fantastic presentation and program. And we are, I think, so fortunate that we have Oregonians across the state willing to help other Oregonians in need, oftentimes at great distance from where the source of help originates. It's just absolutely tremendous program. Questions or comments? Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wong, would you back that up and show me how many people in certain geographical locations in the state are missing a meal. I'm curious, I like to do numbers, I'm curious how you arrive at that, because it would almost have to be, you'd have to touch bases with everyone in Eastern Oregon or the state of Oregon to determine that. How'd you get there?
Chair Witt and Representative Esquivel, those numbers aren't numbers that we derived. They're actually numbers that were derived by the USDA. They have a set of questions that they add to the Census American Community Survey. I think it's like 18 questions. And what they do is that they take that information, just a series of questions asking about their food, you know, situation. And it's those numbers that the USDA takes from that census is what gives these percentages. I can get you the report. They do put out an annual report on their methodologies, but it is based on census techniques.
Well, please. I would like to have that, Mr. Wong, because to me, I'd love to know how we arrive at that and how we stay on top of it, because if it's every 10 years, that 5 years, you're out of the loop.
It's actually taken from the American Community Survey that's conducted annually, and the USDA analysis is a 3-year rolling average. So when they come out with statistics in this case, I believe they're for 2011, it's from a 3-year rolling average. So it includes the 2011, 2010, and 2009 data.
So is it just a sample of people? Because I've never been questioned.
Statistically valid numbers.
Yeah, it's a random sampling, and then they use statistical analysis to extrapolate down to a household level.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I don't claim to be a statistician, but I'm...
Okay. Well, I'm just seeing the holes in the system. I'm just seeing how. Because if you send it to a certain group of people that you're dealing with, of course you're going to get a certain answer. But if you send it to the public at large, you may get a complete different answer. And you'd have to stay on top of that. That's what bothers me. You'd have to stay right on top of that all the time. Yeah. Anyway, I'd be curious to see it, Mr. Wong.
Representative Whitsitt.
Yes. Thank you for your presentation, and I know Mike Noonan, being the representative from Klamath. And I just want to make a point. You haven't been in here before, but members of the committee have. We have two overlapping federal endangered species biological opinions for the water in the Klamath Basin, and we are threatened right now with the shutoff of water into the Klamath Basin where Mr. Noonan grows his potatoes. And so I just want everybody to sort of make the connection that things as seemingly remote as the ESA can profoundly affect our food bank and our ability to grow not only food for sale, but the food that goes to feed Oregonians too. So I just wanted to point that out. We're praying for no water cutoff.
Vice Chair McEwen.
Thank you, Chair Witt. I too appreciate your presentation. This is a very important issue to all of us, and I think particularly those that live in areas of the state that have high poverty rates, where these are very, very important projects that you continue to work on. So I thank you for your good work. Mr. Kennedy Wong, I had a question regarding a comment you made about USDA and the fact that the resources that you receive from them have continued to dwindle over the years. What do you attribute that to?
All of the resources that we get through USDA come through the Emergency Food Assistance Program in Title III of the Farm Bill. Those programs were originally set up back in the 70s primarily as price supports. It was a time when the U.S. Congress decided to change philosophy for price supports rather than paying farmers not to plant, paying them to plant and then distribute that food to the Emergency Food Assistance Program. So it's a combination of factors. As food prices continue to rise, there's been less need for as much price support, okay, which then, because those two, the nutrition programs and the price supports, were tied together, it erodes the amount of money that's available for food assistance while it's eroding price supports. But also, the appetite in Washington is for reducing spending on social service programs in general, or capping that spending. The emergency food programs are as much a target of that philosophy as anything else. I think Philip can talk more about the current farm bill debate, but we're anticipating not only, at least in the next year, because they're in continuation, they haven't passed a new farm bill, we're expecting things to kind of hold steady, a little bit of a decline next year, but the debates moving forward with the farm bill are pretty dire when it comes to emergency food programs. They're talking about not only cuts to the funding that goes to actual food that we distribute, but more importantly to the larger programs like SNAP and WIC, which really are the primary front on fighting hunger in the United States. There's not much we can do. We're kind of the last line of defense. We do need our congressional representatives to really understand the value of those dollars and the real economic impact of those dollars. Interestingly, I was at a Northwest Food Processors Association meeting this past January, and gentleman Kevin Storms, who's a former Simplot executive, did a presentation, and he did a very good analysis of how SNAP benefits really are not just about keeping people fed in the community, but they actually are economic stimulus with an incredible multiplier impact, because that money is then spent by those individuals on products that are manufactured primarily in the United States. And so it actually has a twofold impact of not only keeping people fed, but also economic stimulus for food production companies.
Right. Thank you.
Additional questions or comments?
I have a comment, if I may.
Please.
I guess it would be a follow-up. I'm on your website, and I'd like to make a little plug for your Adopt an Acre program. I think that's brilliant. And I'll give you an opportunity to speak to that for a second, if you'd like, if it's all right with Chair Witt.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. I was not trying to make a fundraising effort here, but...
Take full advantage.
I will do that. Thank you very much, Representative McCown. We... try to cover all the costs associated with getting these products to the Oregon Food Bank, and in a size that will go in a food box. With pancake mix as a good example, we get it from Continental Mills in a 50-pound bag. There's a lot of things volunteers can do in the warehouse. Rebagging flour is not one of them that's done very well without making a big mess. So we not only have some costs associated with making it into pancake mix, but we also have to pay to rebag it. We have to have that done commercially. We get a lot of that donated, but we don't get all of it donated. And so our goal is to have that delivered to Oregon Food Bank, all these products, at no further cost. They do the distribution, they pick up, they move it around. So we ask the public, you know, we got the farmers and the food processors are involved, got Oregon Food Bank, but we ask the public to get involved and adopt an acre to help us get it from point A to point B, to cover some of those processing costs and repackaging costs that are associated. So we ask the public to do that. That's the way to the public and businesses will make a donation to help us do what we're doing, and that's called Adopt an Acre. I didn't come up with the idea. Fred and the founding board members wrestled on that one, but it came up with a great concept, and it makes that nice connection that people are looking for. So they can connect with a grower. There's some farmer stories on our webpage. They can go directly and see who some of those are. People like that connection, and so we build on that. But that's how we do our fundraising, and it's, as you know, with nonprofits, it's all about fundraising.
Thank
you very much.
Thank you. Representative Reardon.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed going down and working with Peter at the food bank on Northeast 33rd. Great opportunity of taking groups of people down there, and it's so well run. It's an enjoyable experience. I just wanted to ask, are there opportunities like that across the state where other legislators could organize work parties?
Chair Witt Reardon, for the record, I Philip Kennedy Wong, I didn't plant that question, just want to be clear. Yes. Of the 20 regional food banks, all of them do have active volunteer programs. They're at different levels of sophistication depending on, you know, the area and, you know, how many people they have active in their volunteer programs. You know, obviously some of you were able to come to Marion Polk Food Share this session and be part of that volunteer party, which we are greatly appreciative. And volunteers, which is, I want to mention, is an important and valuable resource for food banks. It's we sort of plan it into our budget, just in terms of how we make ends meet. Without volunteers, we're not able to be as successful or as efficient.
I am sure that many of the food banks would welcome the volunteer efforts as well. And I would just share just from a personal perspective, perhaps downstream even from the local food bank, there are organizations that serve food to the people, prepare the food and serve it. And if you want a truly heartwarming experience, I think that that's something that you will never forget if you participate in that. Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. When I pheasant hunt over in the Ontario area, I see that they take truckloads and truckloads and truckloads of onions and things and lay them out in the field. And I think they destroy them. Why don't we work with some of those people? I think you were talking about onions.
We've been over there.
Trust me, I hate onions. And they stink. So that's why I know they're there.
Chair Wynn and Representative Esquivel, we have been over there several times to Ontario, and we are working with growers and the packers and shippers over there to try and capture a truckload or two of those onions a month and get them coming our way. Mike tells me that the network can absorb that kind of quantity, and we've delivered that message, and we're actively working with them. The issue over there is that anything in Eastern Oregon involves Idaho. We have the Oregon Food Bank, we have the Idaho Food Bank, and we are trying to coordinate those two. And they work together all the time, but it is a broader question, and we have to work with, need to work with the Idaho-Oregon Shippers Association to make all that happen. So we're doing that right now. We're trying to do that.
Please.
I think the individual that I see that does this is a person from Idaho that's leasing property in Oregon and farming it.
Yeah.
I think he's leasing like 1,600 acres right there.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I think we've been looking as various members of the committee for opportunities to help assist everyone involved. And I'm wondering if there are ways that we could possibly help the farmers and the processors who are providing that food to the Oregon Food Bank system. Is there anything that we could do to perhaps publicize the good efforts that they're doing? I recognize that they're doing this through their own grace and goodwill, but a half a million pounds of potatoes deserves some kind of recognition. And I don't know if there are ever public service announcements that the food bank does, but there may be some members of this committee who would be willing to be part of an effort to thank the farming and producer community for all of their very good efforts at feeding some very, very hungry Oregonians. Just a thought.
Chair, we'd be more happy to follow with you and share with you some of the things that we're doing and how we publicize those partnerships.
Very good. Excellent. Thank you. Vice Chair Esquivel?
Yeah, I think, well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's a great idea because I would love to help advertise that. And even if we have to, even though they'll extort money from us, the Mail Tribune, my local paper, would probably be very happy to run an ad, especially as what they charge for it. But anyway, I think we could get enough people together to run an ad and thank those people because, you know, so many good deeds go unheard by the public, and that's unfortunate. So we need to let people know exactly who's doing what, when, where, why, and how.
So very, very true.
Thank you.
Thank you. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. What a tremendous presentation. What a tremendous project. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to please call up our Marlon Martin.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you very much for allowing us time today. Before I even get started, I want to please thank you again for the extraordinary work that this committee did last year with the introduction and the passing of House Bill 4068, which is known as the bycatch bill, that helps us a lot in Clatsop County because we are definitely a fish county. Some of the things I'd like to talk to you about today are actually the processing of wild game and fish, including bycatch, in Clatsop County. In 2010, during the design and construction phases of our new regional food bank, one of the things that we took into consideration is the fact that we were seeing, for several reasons, small amounts of fresh whole food coming into the food banking system in Clatsop County. Part of that was our inability to receive and process that fish. Part of it was the fact that we come from a very small county, and so the allocation of food in the state of Oregon is proportionate to population, and so it's pretty small. So we have a small food bank and we have a small population, but the can-do attitude of the people in Clatsop County is anything but small. And so we decided we were going to design and equip a food processing and repackaging room in our new food bank. We acquired a food processing license and a non-slaughter meat processing license with the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and we began to develop a stronger and closer relationship with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Oregon State Police in the recovery and collection of fish and game. So as an outcome, in 2012, the first two full seasons of what we did, we received 35,433 gross pounds of fish and game that was processed at our food bank or at a fishery very near our food bank. Of that, 23,024 pounds ended up in the frying pans of people in Clatsop County. That's a significant number for us. We come from a county, we don't have enough money to buy meat, so it was very significant. Based on an average value of donated food for that particular poundage, it's about $33,494, an amount of money we could never come up with to purchase meat, so it was very good. This year, we've started off pretty good. So far in 2013, we've had 12,567 pounds received at our food bank. Now, of that, there was a very large donation from a fish processor. That donation was partially processed in the fact that it came in a frozen fillet form. However, it was extremely large fillets and was packed in minimum of 50-pound boxes, so it was not distributable at all by our agencies. We were able to take that product into our regional food bank from Oregon Food Bank, process it. It was tempered, brought to 28 degrees, cut while it was still in a frozen state, repackaged into consumer-sized units, repackaged into 50-pound cases, and most of it was sent back to the Oregon Food Bank for distribution across the state of Oregon. We were able to keep about 3,000 pounds of that fish for people in Clatsop County. You know, it was interesting during the day when we were working that product, one of the volunteers said, gee, I wonder what this product is worth. It was cod, halibut, and ling cod, very nice fish.
Wow.
And so we sent one of the volunteers to Safeway to check the price, and that day's price was a little over $21 a pound. We had a volunteer whose daughter works at Pipes Market, and we got on a cell phone, called her. She checked the price of halibut fillets at Pipes Market, and they were over $42 a pound. So at the local Clatsop County price, which was the lower price, the fish we processed in two mornings exceeded $131,000 in retail value.
Wow.
And so I'm not trying to be a money guy, but I think it's so important that we recognize how much value that we have the ability to create by rolling up our sleeves and taking that attitude. This is a simple photograph of the day that we were doing the halibut in our repack room. It's pretty simple, but we run we can run about 1,200 pounds an hour with a small group of volunteers pushing that meat through there. So if Clatsop County was a chapter in the book Hunger Games, we would be District 12, if anybody read that book. We are definitely the hunters. To hitchhike just a little bit off, the conversation about produce, we have also embarked on an initiative called Food Bank Fresh, where we are trying to distribute much more fresh fruits and vegetables along with our meat process. In 2009, we distributed almost zero because of our inability. This year, about one-third of the food that we distribute will be fresh fruits and vegetables, nearly 400,000 pounds. And in fact, this afternoon, from 2 to 4, we'll be running one of our weekly farmers markets that is free to low-income people. We do it twice a week from April through September, and we distribute it in excess of 1,000 pounds an hour to people in a farmers market atmosphere. So that's Clatsop County in a nutshell.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you very, very much.
Maybe I should move back home. Since I'm from there.
Thank you.
I noticed that, I recognize that you mentioned the bycatch bill now a couple of times, and I just wanted to recognize Representative Boone, who sponsored that bill and put, I know, an enormous amount of her personal time and effort into the passage of that bill. And it was very, very good work that she produced. Questions or comments from Mr. Martin? I'm not seeing any. Thank you so very much. What a tremendous food bank operation you're running. And our very best to everyone in Clatsop County.
Thank you.
With that, I'd like to call up, please, Sharon Thornberry, Megan Newell-Ching, and Spencer Masterson, please. Welcome to each of you.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming today.
Chairman Witt, representatives, thank you very much for having us here today. For the record, my name is Sharon Thornberry. I'm the Community Food Systems Manager at Oregon Food Bank. I am a resident of Philomath, so I work from my home and travel across the state to do the work that we do. On the panel with me today is Megan Newell-Ching, who's our community resource developer, and Spencer Masterson, who is a former RARE AmeriCorps volunteer, worked with us for 2 years doing community food systems work in Linn County, and who is now working part-time for us this year. And he will tell you about some of the work he's done in the past and currently. The work that we do at Oregon Food Bank is thinking more systematically, particularly about rural community food systems, but we're also doing this in the urban areas. And the vision for the Community Food Systems Program at Oregon Food Bank is that we envision communities across Oregon and Southwest Washington where citizens are empowered and actively engaged across sectors to attain personal and community food security. We're taking three approaches to do that work, and we started doing this work about 2000 and really formalized it around 2004. We do community foods organizing, community development work through FEAST, Food Education Agriculture Solutions Together, which Megan will tell you more about. We're also systematically doing community food assessments of all of the rural counties in Oregon. And we, through those AmeriCorps volunteers that we've placed in communities to do those food assessments, that we do from a very grassroots basis, they're probably different from what you see in terms of an assessment or an economic development, because we're actually going to the people and asking them what they think needs to happen in their communities. The third piece of what we're doing is community food systems networking, because there's a growing network of organizations across the state that are working at a grassroots level on community food systems work in their own communities. And so we're helping to connect all of those communities. Simultaneously, we're able to put more food into the system, and we're actually able to help people become more self-sufficient. I'm going to turn this over to Megan to talk about FEAST, and then Spencer is going to talk with you about the community food assessments and organizing projects.
Thank you very much.
So, Chair and representatives, for the record, my name is Megan Newell-Ching. I'm the community resource developer at Oregon Food Bank. I work with Sharon in community food systems. And I'm going to talk to you about our program called FEAST. As Sharon mentioned, FEAST stands for Food, Education, Agriculture, Solutions Together. And This program came about as Sharon was doing work across the state with communities who are interested in taking a look at some long-term upstream solutions, and we're doing assessments and sort of getting the lay of the land, understanding what the gaps and opportunities in their communities were, but not really getting to that next step of actually taking action to improve their local food system. And so the idea behind FEAST was to find a way to bring the community together to have a discussion about what the priorities, what the opportunities were to improve the food system, and then to make action plans and really get moving forward to make some of these positive changes and improvements in communities. So what is a feast, or what happens at a feast? It's an event that brings together the broadest possible array of stakeholders in from the local food system to have a discussion about really about the local food system or the regional food system of that area. We've done these from the scale to of a tiny town, Summit, Oregon, which is you know, in the mountains just outside of Corvallis, all the way to a county level. In Curry County a few weeks ago, we had over 100 people. So it's really convening a conversation. And the key thing about the FEAST program is that it's organized by local folks. We, as the Oregon Food Bank, are just there to facilitate, provide support and technical assistance, and help the local folks get organized. So the impetus for this program really comes from people in the local area. And on the actual day of a FEAST event, what happens is that folks from the local food system share stories about what's happening. What is the lay of the land in that particular area? So we start with a panel of who we consider experts from the local areas, and they will represent different parts of the food system, such as retail, restaurants, folks who are working with low-income folks and food access, farmers. Always, Oregon agriculture plays a big role. And after we hear from those local experts, then we talk as a whole group about what are some things we could do to improve access to healthy food, to improve economic development for retail or restaurants or growers. And those folks in the room from the community come up with themes or solutions or projects that they feel are priorities for their area. And then we establish work groups to work on each of the priorities that's determined. And that very day, so in the space of about 4 hours, they create an organizing plan, including some next steps about how they're going to move forward to achieve whatever the goal is that they've come up with. And in different places of the state, those have included new farmers markets, getting increased access to SNAP or WIC in the local community, either at the farmers market or at retail outlets, expanded or new community gardens, connecting donors with food banks, and additional education opportunities for nutrition and garden education. So we found that it's a really powerful tool to bring together a lot of folks in the community and to make things happen, to work on some long-term solutions, because we know, you know, at Oregon Food Bank, our mission is to end hunger and its root causes, and we really see this as a key to that second piece of our mission. Long-term solutions are going to be necessary. We are very much about both, and we need to feed people today, but we also need to help people feed themselves in the future. So just a little bit about the impact of the FEAST program. One thing that's really unique about it is that it brings together the public and private sectors and the nonprofit sector in a really interesting way that's, I think, different than work that a lot of other food banks are doing. And when folks come to a feast, we ask them what sector they represent. And in this diagram, you can see that folks from all across the spectrum are coming to these events and participating. So we have folks from emergency food agencies, faith-based organizations, nutrition education, the folks you would expect to be engaged by the food bank in the nonprofit sector, but we're also seeing a lot of folks from the private sector. Particularly, we have a lot of food producers coming to these events. In fact, you know, more than 30% of the participants at our events have been food producers. And we also see public sectors. We see elected officials come to these events, folks from public health departments. We've seen a lot of economic development offices getting involved in this work. So it's really bringing together folks from a lot of different sectors to come up with solutions that are you know, determined by that community, and then the work is really driven by folks in that community. So it's really key thing when we talk about FEAST that it's community self-determined and community-driven work. What have we done so far? We've done more than 50 events. This program started in 2009, and we've engaged over 1,500 people. The program has been so popular that we were asked to develop a model to train other folks in other states on how to use the model. And so now we have a curriculum that we can train folks on how to facilitate FEAST events, and it's been implemented in 6 states beyond Oregon. We had some work done by an independent evaluator to study what the effects were of this organizing event after the fact. And 6 months to a year after FEAST events in local communities, it was shown to have a statistically significant increase in community connections between and among the folks who had come to the FEAST events, both in the strength of their connection to one another, so they were working more closely with folks on projects, and also the number of connections they had to folks in their community. And we know from a number of different research studies that community connectivity, particularly for folks in rural areas, is an indicator for the health of individuals and the community. So we think that's really encouraging. Additionally, you can't see it sort of slid off the bottom of the slide, but this year our program was recognized nationally by the Feeding America Food Bank Network as the Food Bank Innovation Award Program Winner of the Year nationally. So that's really exciting for us. Yeah. So that's what I have to tell you about FEAST. Spencer's going to talk to you a little bit about food assessments and the work we've been doing with rural grocery stores, and I think then at the end we will take questions. Thank you.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Spencer Masterson, and I'm a community food systems analyst for Oregon Food Bank. Thank you for taking the time to allow me to share a little bit about work that I've been doing with the Oregon Food Bank. So as Sharon mentioned, I was a member of the RARE program, which stands for Resource Assistance for Rural Environments, and it's an AmeriCorps program based out of the University of Oregon's Community Service Center, and it places AmeriCorps members in rural communities throughout Oregon for a term of 11 months, mostly working with public city governments doing planning and things like that. And in the last few years, Oregon Food Bank has partnered with this program to complete community food assessments or food systems planning in counties throughout the state. And so far, there have been 14 community food assessments covering 21 counties, two going on currently. That will be wrapping up in July. And we've also, through this program, coordinated and facilitated 21 FEASTs throughout the state and completed 80-plus rural grocery store owner surveys. And I'll get into a little bit more of that program and a follow-up that we've done with those rural grocery store owner surveys. And so why do we do community food assessments? So the community food assessment process, as Sharon mentioned, is a community organizing or community development process. And we're working to find out from the community and from folks that are involved in getting food from the farm to people's tables, figuring out what are some challenges within that system, what are some of the strengths or opportunities for developing increased capacity within the local food system. We're also looking for ways of strengthening the emergency food services in Oregon's rural communities, and looking for policy solutions and other actions that can improve delivery of food to folks. And our approach is a little different than a normal assessment process. We use a qualitative-based approach where we're really looking for stories and ideas and things that are coming from folks instead of using more statistical-based or using a lot of data and going out and doing a lot of surveying and other quantitative measures. While we're doing this process, we're really working to organize people that are interested in these efforts within that community to network and work together to create some common solutions. So over the last 6 months, I've been working on a summary of all of these community food assessments. I'll try to be brief. It's about 900 pages, and so I could go on for days.
Thank you.
But basically, there are four main themes or topics that came out from all of these assessments that are seen as kind of opportunities going forward. How can we improve community food systems within Oregon? The first is increasing healthy food access. We identified certain groups that are having difficulty in accessing food in general, but also healthy food. And one example that I can pull out of a community-based solution comes from the Gorge. There's a nonprofit called Gorge Grown. That is the Gorge. A lot of the communities in the Gorge are rural communities that didn't have access to healthy local food. And so what this nonprofit did is created a mobile farmers market where they a different community in a different day, they'll drive a truck full of local farm fresh produce and deliver it to these different communities and allow for those rural residents to have access to Oregon-grown food. The next one is to promote small and medium-sized growers. We found that there is a lot of interest from young farmers or young folks to get into farming, but they're facing certain difficulties in acquiring land, the capital needed to acquire land, or having other skill sets such as most of these small farmers are direct marketing the product themselves. And so while farmers generally are excited about being on the farm, getting out and having that face-to-face interaction for some is challenging, and some don't have the skill set or the interest in going out and the time, quite frankly, to go out and direct market. So that's another challenge. And then finally, we recognize that a lot of these small growers are lacking the scale-appropriate infrastructure that used to be around 50 years ago. So smaller fruit and vegetable processing companies or processing facilities. A major issue for a lot of ranchers, especially smaller ranchers that are looking to direct market or direct sell their product, is access to USDA facilities for livestock processing. And one example of a community-based solution that I think is really interesting is in the Southern Willamette Valley. There's the Southern Willamette Valley Bean and Grain Project, and it's a group of farmers that have got together that some are grass seed farmers that are looking for alternative crops, and then some are just small farmers that are interested in trying dry beans and grains in the Willamette Valley, which used to be an area where a lot of dry beans were grown, and today still there's wheat. And so what they're doing is coming together and identifying varieties of beans and grains that grow well in our short climate for growing those crops, and then even working on bringing back that infrastructure, small mills and storage facilities and things like that. So I think it's a really exciting example of a community-based solution to this a challenge. And then the other two that I'll just briefly mention is build food literacy. And food literacy, what we refer to there is nutrition education, gardening, and cooking. Those kind of knowing where your food is coming from and how to grow your own food or how to access food. That's what we refer to build food literacy. And then the final is community food organizing, which Megan mentioned, our feast program, and these community food assessments is the example of that work. And so, like I said, there's a few more assessments being done this year. There's, as you can see, a few counties still to be done, but we're hoping to have a comprehensive report on community food, or have community food assessments done throughout the state. And the other report that I'll just briefly talk about is referring to those rural grocery store owner surveys that I mentioned. So we noticed that in all of these rural communities where we're doing food assessments that there are grocery store owners that some of which are having a challenge surviving and maintaining their store. And so I just want to start with what we found is some of the important why rural grocery stores are important for these rural communities. The first is that they are rural economic development. In this report, out of the stores that we surveyed, on average, each store had 5 full-time employees and 5 part-time employees. And in some communities where there are 1,000 folks, that's a pretty big employer for that small community. And one store in John Day actually told us about how there's a hospital in that community that when they're recruiting employees, they'll actually take the recruits down to the grocery store to show them how great of a grocery store this town has as a way of recruiting employees for their hospital, which I thought was really interesting. Rural grocery stores also play an important role in accessing food for rural residents. Like I mentioned, the gorge-grown mobile farmers market is one way, but a rural grocery store is another way for folks to access food in isolated communities. And for those on low income or with limited access to transportation, the rural grocery store is often the only place that they can buy food other than the food bank. And so if these stores are closing up and leaving rural communities, that has some serious implications for those folks that are in those communities. And then finally, an important role that rural grocery stores plays is that they're a social hub. We had stores there's a store in Lost Dean that said that they have a daily gathering around their old wood stove in the morning. There's a women's group that meets in the afternoon, and every sporting event, folks say, let's meet at the grocery store. It's a cultural institution in that community. And so some of the challenges that we found that rural grocery stores are facing is meeting minimum purchasing requirements from their distributors, product delivery, especially for the more isolated communities such as Jordan Valley and John Day, stocking fresh produce, and there's some challenges in having infrastructure such as enough refrigeration space, the quick turnover, the perishability of the produce, and then high operations costs and also slim profit margins. So with these, in order to meet a minimum purchasing requirement, some distributors will then, if they can't meet that minimum, they'll charge a surcharge or a fuel surcharge or another fee, and that just, and then these stores are also purchasing at such low quantity that their margins just become slimmer and slimmer and slimmer until there was one example of a store owner who wanted to stock baby food because he knew that there were some residents in his community that wanted baby food, but he was actually losing money by stocking that food in order to sell it at a reasonable price. And so some opportunities going forward with the rural grocery stores excuse me one second. There's a couple examples of ways that we can help support rural grocery stores in our in Oregon. One is healthy rural stores, which can be based off of a program that's already happening quite a lot in urban areas where convenience stores are being turned into healthy food markets. So while in an urban area, distance isn't quite as extreme for rural as it is for rural residents, even a mile can be a long way for some folks. And so in urban areas, there are these convenience stores are being stocked with fresh produce. And so essentially, there's opportunities to look at a program like that in Oregon that's focusing on rural stores and helping those stores increase their offerings of healthy, fresh produce. 37% of residents in rural Oregon counties with populations less than 65,000 use SNAP benefits, and so a lot of stores that don't offer SNAP benefits are losing out on possible income from SNAP or WIC, but also that means that those residents in those communities that use the Federal Nutrition Services programs cannot use these benefits at those stores. As I mentioned before, there's some issues in infrastructure funding or infrastructure for having healthy fresh produce, and so a possible solution would be providing some low-cost loans or grants for stores to provide or to allow them to increase their infrastructure to then stock healthy fresh produce. Or in some cases, there are stores that have outdated equipment that is a drain on their operations costs, and so there's an opportunity to help some stores bring in more efficient equipment. Currently, there's no statewide alliance of small independent stores, and so what we found were there are a lot of community-based solutions that are happening kind of informally. Stores are working on having the same purchasing from the same distributor and then pooling together their resources to achieve that minimum. There's instances of stores sharing customers, things like that, but it's all happening on a pretty informal basis. So we're looking at a possible an opportunity to align these stores on a statewide basis. And then finally, the easiest way to support rural grocery stores is to shop at them. So I would just encourage you all to stop by your local independently owned rural grocery store, say hi, purchase a few things, and encourage your friends to do the same. So thank you very much for taking the time to listen.
Thank you very, very much. Appreciate that. And I see the rural grocery stores in Granite County got quite a bit of coverage this morning. So. Yes. With that, are there any questions or comments? I'm not seeing any. Our committee began its work this year, and one of the things that we discovered in our very first meeting was the extent to which ag and natural resources contribute to our state's economy, and it turns out it's the largest sector in our state's economy. And perhaps it's appropriate that we're on the cusp of ending our committee's work for this session with a note that that sector gives back in a very large way to Oregonians across our state who so desperately need that help. I want to thank each and every one of you for your presentation as well as the very good work that you do on behalf of the state of Oregon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And with that, I am going to adjourn the public information meeting. Committee members, for the good of the order, I am going to ask Beth. We have likely one more informational meeting.
We do. Mr. Chair, members, we're in the process of developing an agenda for an info session on June 11th, and I'll send you an email about this. On June 11th at 3 p.m. For the some information about the STEP program, the Salmon and Trout Enhancement Program. And the plan is to meet jointly with the Senate Rural Communities and Economic Development Committee and hear about some proposed changes in that program. I'll send you an email.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
If there is a minute or two at that meeting, there is another subject that might be appropriate. I'll talk to you about
okay.
that.
Okay. Very good. Look forward to that. At that meeting, of course, we've had a number of suggestions for interim work, and we could review that quickly during that meeting also to kind of give us an idea of where we might head as a committee during the interim.
Great.
Okay. Anything else?
Maybe doing a couple, two or three.
Oh, absolutely we will. And with that, we stand adjourned. Thank you very much, committee members.